What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBeer here, and we are back again 2 weeks in a row. So what happens when we get off our normal schedule? I got to get us back on track. I don't feel like I've been keeping the trains running as efficiently as they used to back in the day, but life happens, and it's what we do. But we are back. I am joined by my compatriots, BJ.
Hey, what's up?
And Brian.
Even Mussolini needed a break sometime, so don't beat yourself up.
No.
What?
No.
You made the trains run on time. That's the whole thing.
Out the gate. We're in the midst of a cancellation of a homosexual.
I'm going to get canceled for Mussolini jokes? Give me
No. Listen, no.
I was going to start this episode by saying, for waiting 30 minutes outside of a different address on whether or not I wanted to podcast with you.
Really? I wanted to totally bring that up. So people who are not aware of what we're talking, as we like to do, we were going to ramble for a second. If you don't listen to Sloppy Seconds, is the name of the show, right?
Yep. Yeah.
It's the Mom Network. It's
Race Chaser. For this. It's all over.
So our colleague, can I call him a colleague, a former bear bust entertainer, can I link him back to
Big Dipper? I mean, that resort is in the ground, much like his potential career now. So
So how bad was it? Because I didn't watch the clip, I haven't listened to that show, I just read the reactions, and it's hard to gauge just from the article, because you could write it up and make it sound worse than it is. But it was Ben de la Creme was guesting on Big Dipper and I want to say Meatball. What's your name? Is it Meatball? I know, my brain just
Meatloaf. Went. It's Meatloaf.
Meatloaf. Yeah, Meatloaf.
He's back from the dead.
and they were discussing what hookups and Dipper's like. Also, if you're a longtime listener of Flame On, you know Dipper only because we talk about the, you know, Race Chasers, and he's the producer, you know, whatever. He screens hookups by giving them an address that's not his, but nearby that he can like look out and watch. And then based on if they're hot or if like they match their profile,
it was bad. It was like, when I tell you it was bad, I mean, this is coming, those that listen and you guys are very well aware, and the people in my life are very well aware that I am somewhat socially inept, and I've just kind of given up on understanding most social cues because they make no sense. They've never made sense to me. But when he will hook up, but he, like, let's say they don't have a photo or something, and he still like wants to hook up. That's okay. Fine. Where I'll get horny.
So this is a Sniffies thing, and they don't have a picture of their face, but there might have their
some.
Butt
some don't have a picture, but I guess he's okay. he framed it with he was worried because I'm pretty sure he lives by himself, and he was like nervous about somebody coming over and knowing where he lives. And I believe it was the clip. Was he sends them either across the street or across the hall from his apartment and waits for them to show up. And if they're hot, he'll be like, oh, by the way, over here. Sorry, I gave you the wrong address. Or if they're not, he just flat out ghosts them.
Ugh.
And here's the thing is Meatloaf and both Ben de la Creme are like, is it Meatloaf? You never confirmed.
We're just going to make
is it Meatball?
Meatloaf is now Mavity. If you've watched Pat's the new Doctor Who.
Pat's just sitting there.
Can we all laughing and I'm like, collectively?
But that's Meatloaf. The thing is the two drag queens in the room are like, absolutely fucking not. That is the worst. And he's like, at first he's just like kind of giggling about it. Like, oh no, this is for my safety. And I'm like, that is my worst fear, like going to hook up with somebody and like them giving me the wrong address or like sending me to a Trump rally or some nonsense. So like,
Oh, so no, it was a pretty severe reaction. They were obviously like,
they were very like,
it wasn't a bit, like, it wasn't a joke.
Meatball is like, did you think we would be on your side on this? Like, no, this is, it was really bad. Like really, really bad.
Like, well, on top of that, on top of the fact that, in like the, I don't want to say terms of service, but kind of like the rules that the apps abide by, like you can't give somebody a different address. Like if that's the case, give them like, give them a public,
meet at a public like, location. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, a, you know, a Walgreens parking lot or whatever. But part of what was so egregious on top of everything else was that they said, well, how long do you wait before you let them know they're at the wrong place? And he goes, oh, I've waited 30 minutes. So I've essentially just like torturing this person because they weren't quote unquote hot enough.
I've seen Big Dipper in person. Let me just say, and even if that's your type, it ain't all that. Come on. Like, I like
it. We're not here to shame anybody's preference and people's looks.
No, I know. I'm just saying, no matter what your preference is, it's not worth that nonsense. Just,
He ain't getting any hookups anytime soon. I mean, the grave has been dug, so we'll see. But but that's the thing is like there's a TikToker I follow. The Elderberry. The thing is, people get killed doing that. You knock on the wrong door. A child was killed for just knocking on a door because he was lost. Like the people opened the door and just shot him. So Jesus. Like, that's the thing. It like, you don't do that. Like this day and age, like at work, if we're like when we were working in California and stuff and we're knocking on doors, like we don't knock on doors. Like I'm not doing it. I have told my entire team and everybody, like I'm not just wandering up to somebody's door and knocking on a door. Like I need a team. I need somebody to have called. I need flyers. Like it's a whole thing for safety's sake. And like, yeah, it was like the moment he said that, I was like, oh, you better backtrack, buddy, because I could, because I listened to the show and I was like, and then I just like, I immediately heard that part, paused it in my car, went to my phone and just typed it into a general search. And it was all, I was like, because it was like the day after the episode came out.
I only saw it on Instagram on like them or one of those, you know, gay publication in quotes. Like it seemed like it was sort of it could go either way. So I'm glad to hear it is seriously like what it said, and it was not a hit piece or, you know, whatever. So,
oh yeah.
Oh no. Yeah. Meatball. I mean, Meatball was like, are you serious? And then Ben was like, that's fucked up. The funny part about this is that after this was done, after this was recorded, they still put it out.
I know.
Well, like, literally.
This is why I thought it was almost like, you know, no plastic.
If I admitted that I murdered somebody on a podcast with you all as we're recording this, I'd edit that shit out before it went live.
Like, and let's be clear, I love
his podcast.
As I say, isn't he probably the editor?
Yeah, he edits the, like, but here's my thing. I love y'all enough to be like, okay, that's their one. I'm not going to say anything. Like, I'm not reporting them. That can be their one.
But for real, like, this is, you are, it's not like you were a guest on somebody else's podcast. Like, let's say he came on this podcast and the same conversation happened and he said that and it was whatever. I'm the editor of the show. Unless he had said, hey, do me a favor. You know, I kind of realized that was fucked up. I'm not going to do that anymore. Can you do me a favor and not include that segment? Like, take that out? Okay. May not, because it's not his show. He makes the request. Whatever. Sloppy Seconds with Big Dipper and Meatball is a Big Dipper and Meatball podcast, of which he is probably editor of. If not, Will Pitts is the editor, because Will and Dipper both are the editors of Race Chaser and Hot Goss, and you know, they're part of that conglomerate, Forever Dog, Moguls of Media, whatever you want to, you know, put it under. But it's his podcast that he can not have that go out into the world where the other two people in the conversation are both like, that's fucked up.
And how did they transition out of that? How did they?
I don't know. BJ, you listen to the show. I don't.
I haven't finished that episode.
Oh, gosh, I gotta know.
It hurt. It was so cringy. And I've been like, part of me wants to go here because I think it's still up. So part of me wants to be like, how do you get out of that? But at the same time, I'm
like, he like doubled down on Twitter and like posted an address instead. I don't know. I'll say this. When I first met Dipper at Beach Bear back in the day before Craig Jungwirth bought it for $5. Although apparently he's back on the loose.
No.
If you follow, it was like out South Florida, out SFL on Instagram, like their online publication has it as a cover story. I guess he's back to harassing people and doing shit. So if you know the Craig Jungwirth stuff, you know what we're talking about. If not, don't. I would say go look it up, but don't. It's a lot of crazy.
His picture is like on like a do not serve poster in a shop here in Atlanta.
That's phenomenal.
I looked over and I'm like, I can't escape.
no, those crazy eyes. But yeah, so met him there and kind of got the same vibe that everybody else did, where like, he's only interested in talking to you if he wants to suck your dick. And then I had gotten a lot of requests to have him as a guest at Bear Bust, reached out to him, booked him, had a lovely like hour long conversation with him. As a person, thought really, really lovely conversation. Had him at the event, did a great job, did what he was contracted to do. Didn't really, those weekends I was always so busy I didn't have much time to really kind of interact with the talent outside of making sure everything was okay, doing sound checks, all of that stuff. So it's just kind of funny watching all of this happen and hearing everybody in my Twitter circle of Bear people all going, I'm glad to see y'all finally getting on board with me with not liking this man.
Oh, wow. I think he's just, is he just an idiot? Like, is he just ignorant about how dumb that is and how wrong that is? And maybe this is the comeuppance. I don't know. Yeah,
I don't, I'm not sure, but that's a quandary that we may never know the answer to. So, the Big Dipper drama. I love the fact that this happened right before we recorded and the episode's going out so quickly afterwards, because it will be topical. It will still probably be in the social media sphere when this episode drops on Friday. So.
Relevant.
Look at us being relevant in today's Twitter discourse. Well, let's move on to more fun things to talk about. It is time to chat about the things in pop culture that we are enjoying that have come out that are a part of what is going on in our worlds. So I am going to throw it over to BJ for our first topic of the month. BJ, what are you bringing to the table?
So I am bringing a longtime obsession from 1995. I have been completely obsessed and enamored with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is the second game in the Final Fantasy VII Remake series. And actually, Final Fantasy VII, the original, was my first Final Fantasy game. I never played any of the other ones. The first one I ever played was 7, and then I backtracked and played, like, I think 1, 2, and 3, which were Nintendo and Super Nintendo. But no, I loved Final Fantasy Remake. I played that dropped during the pandemic. So I played the crap out of that, and Rebirth. So
is it that long ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, I believe, 2020 or 2021.
Maybe 21, but damn, that still feels like not that long ago that we were talking about that part of it.
Right. But no, so this one, the first game took place in Midgar, which was the main hub city in the first game. You just went to different boroughs. This one, you have left Midgard and it's completely open world. I'm probably in like area 4. And I think I've got like 6 or 7 more areas, I've got like a couple more areas to go through. And it is, when I say this game is epic, it is huge. And I am a side quest goblin. So I will not, if I can complete every quest in an area before I move on to the next one, I will not do it. I will say, it should be called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What the fuck all the mini games? Because there's like at least 20 or 30 different mini games. There's a mini game out of doing sit-ups. There's a mini game out of picking mushrooms. There is a mini see Brian shaking his head. There's a mini game. You have to indulge in a mini game usually to unlock the area's chocobo. The big ostrich looking things.
I want to ride a chocobo, chocobo, chocobo. I want to ride a chocobo. Oh, what?
So
wait, that was 15, right? 15 has that song 15, in it.
15, yep.
Well, and here's the thing. There's a reference. Yuffie sings that song. So I will say
They put the song in there?
They did. Yuffie sings the Chocobo song while you're riding on one. Another personal favorite little tidbit of mine is almost every character hums or sings the victory music. The da 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 da. And like Barret sings it, Yuffie sings it. I know. I think Tifa sung it once. It's so self-referential. It's almost parodying itself. It's super close to doing it. And I'm like a good 20, 25, 26 hours into the game. 100%. Like they are absolutely taking all the tropes from a lot of the Final Fantasy games and just kind of folding them in, which is great. Cause I know that having the main characters sing the victory music that started in Final Fantasy 15. 15, the characters would randomly sing the victory music once you ended a fight. But so far, the story is great. I will attempt to do no spoilers.
But did they kill what's her name?
I don't. So here's the rub. The first game, the way the first game kind of ends, which spoilers for the first game, so I'm already out the gate. Wrong. Is Aerith and Sephiroth essentially know what's going on. They know exactly how the story is supposed to play out. They know exactly. Aerith is very much aware that she will die, and Sephiroth is very much aware that he will most likely lose until he fucks with fate. So effectively, at the end of the first game, you are in a completely open. Sephiroth could have derailed it. Everything could turn out better. There's a whole multiversal undertone thing that there's limitless possibilities, which they incorporated in the actual gameplay in this one beautifully. You have the option to build relationships with everybody on the team. You can just kibosh it, and it really doesn't hinder the story. You can go on a date with anybody on the team, which in the original game, you could only choose from Aerith or Tifa. Now you can go on a little Ferris wheel. You can go on this giant Ferris wheel date with like anybody, any character. It's kind of amazing. And, it's one of the things that kind of made me think about remakes in general is I don't need a remake of a game that happened like 5, 6 years ago. I mean, if you want to port it, sure. If you do quality of life improvements, okay. But lately, like Persona 3, Persona 3 Reload got a remake. Persona 3 came out, I want to say around, that was a PS2 game. So that came out around late 90s, early 2000s. And then Final Fantasy VII, though, I believe came out like 1995. So it got me thinking of what do I want to see? Like, if they're going to remake a game, I want them to remake a game. I want the game to look nothing like it when it comes back. So Final Fantasy VII. That makes sense. Yeah, Final Fantasy VII. Mario RPG was right at that cusp because it was an SNES game. And in all honesty, when I look at old Mario RPG footage, I'm like, that game looked like ass. I'm not even going to lie. That game looked – it was super insanely relevant for, like, the time. But
you shut your dirty mouth. You dirty, heretical mouth. That game – I mean, yeah, it looks like ass now because of course it would. But like, come on. No.
Well, the remake is phenomenal. Like, the game was phenomenal. I've been waiting for them because I've been trying. What's funny is I got an SNES from a Goodwill years ago, and I got it specifically to try and play Mario RPG. And it was like $170 at a used game store because it was just that hard to find. So when I played the crap out of it on my Switch. Because as soon as they announced the remake, I about lost my mind. So yeah, it's just one of those things that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has really kicked it in the high gear and made me consider, like, okay, if we're going to do, since we're on the remake bandwagon, we are well within the remake bandwagon, especially for video games and movies and whatnot. I'm like, if you remake something from the 90s, I'm all for it because you can almost completely remake the game. You can almost completely remake the game into either a completely different thing. You can give directors and storytellers like a chance to, you know, right wrongs, bad representation, things like that. You can update like how the characters interact, because let me tell you, Tifa's a real one. I want to date Tifa. Like, I normally immediately want to try and date the largest, hairiest man, which unfortunately is Barrett. And Barrett is a toxic top. I'm just going to say it now. You sleep with him and you immediately regret it, but it was fun and you'll probably end up doing it again. So it's a lot of fun. I'm actually very invested in the story. The story hits a little bit too close to home, a giant corporation that's taken over the world and has its own active private military. Normally when something happens like that, I don't need that because we're right on the cusp of it. I don't need to watch it.
The Republican Party? What company are you thinking of?
I'm gonna start calling the Republican Party the Shinra Electric Company, because that's essentially what it is. But no, 10 out of 10, absolutely phenomenal. If you have a PS5 or if you're willing to wait for the PC port, absolutely get it. Some random high notes in the cast. Matthew Mercer, who is the DM on Critical Role. He plays Vincent Valentine, one of the main characters introduced in this game. And then you've got, blah, 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 blah. Oh, the guy who voices everything, John DiMaggio, he plays one of the main antagonists in the game. He's everywhere. And then another little surprise, cameo, James C, who is currently in the live action Avatar series as the cabbage guy, who he voiced in the animated Avatar The Last Airbender series, is also in this. And he was playing... he plays Professor Hojo, another major antagonist. So I was just going through... I was, as I always do with these sort of things, I always go through, like, the voice cast to see if there's any interesting people in there. So I was very pleasantly surprised that those three were in there. And good for him, because his career is taking off. So... I mean, he's done like tons of kid shows. Like, all the voice actors are very seasoned voice actors in this, with the exception of, I think, the voice for Aerith. She's only done like a handful of small roles. So yeah, it's a very, very, it's a very good game. If you are into conservation, definitely give this sucker a play, because it's a very much in the thralls of like, protect the goddamn planet, otherwise you'll die. Messaging. Quick question. Have you guys played any recent remakes or anything? Any remake games?
I played the Final Fantasy. What was the first one called? Something? The one before?
Oh, Final Fantasy VII Remake. So you played the first one.
I played like a couple hours in, and it was great. It really was just, I can't finish anything these days, but I feel like Super Mario RPG, and I played that. And then what was the Link's Awakening? Yeah, so I've played a few remakes. I mean, I think I like what they're doing with Final Fantasy VII, because it does transform the story, and it doesn't just retread the same stuff, which,
yeah,
not as interesting. But I think in general, I do like seeing some of these games revitalized, because they are such good stories that, like, the Japanese tradition of retelling the same story with a remix, like a Rashomon kind of thing. Like, yeah, like, do it. Why not? They're good ideas. And it's not as simple as just like the Hollywood trend of just, we're going to remake this, which I'm going to be talking about here in a minute. But those are the big remakes.
I refuse to play any remakes until my favorite Resident Evil game gets a remake.
Which one is that one?
I think it's actually yours too. Veronica.
Oh my god, Cody, I haven't played a single of the Resident Evil remakes for that exact reason, because Code Veronica was amazing. Code Veronica was everything. You had a cross-dressing villain, you had a freaking ant woman, like, the Bandersnatch, which, I don't know, gave me weird queer energy, maybe it's the name, but like, yeah, no, absolutely. I'm waiting for my Resident Evil Code Veronica remake so I can get into the rest. Absolutely. Honestly, you are correct, sir. I feel your pain there.
I want that so badly, because it's not anywhere else. Like, you can't play it unless you have a Dreamcast. And it's ridiculous, because it was such a good game. I'll tell you this. I didn't play, I think, any of the Resident Evil games before Code Veronica. That was the first one that I played.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I went back and played them all afterwards. I played most of them. I can't say I've played all of the games, because I never beat 4. I didn't like the over-the-shoulder
shooter style. Yeah, I didn't like the view in 4 either.
And then I kind of fell off with the games, and I have 7. I have 7 and or 8 maybe, I don't remember. I've kind of just fallen off, because I don't play as many games as much anymore. But I think Brian and Maddie did get me Link's Awakening, the remake for the Switch. I haven't played it. It got to a point where like I was playing some games, and then I fell out of console gaming during the Panorama, and then Tears of the Kingdom came out, and I was like, I'm back! I'm here! And then and I haven't played much since then, so it's tough for me. But that would be, like, when you're talking about wanting to see something remade, Code Veronica, for me, would be that thing, and that would be, if they announced that tomorrow and said it's coming out on Friday, I would be at the store on Friday, I'd be buying it, and I'd be playing it all weekend. Like, it is one of the few games I actually bought the soundtrack for, because I love that game so much. Not just, I think it was an import, because and this was back in the day when it came out, it was the soundtrack and the sound effects. Oh. I literally have all of the sound effects from the game.
Does it have the footsteps? Because the footsteps, I don't know what it is. Yes! The Resident Evil, the original Resident Evil footstep sound effects are they itch a little part of my brain. I don't know why. I would go to sleep listening to that. They're on Spotify, I think. I think on Spotify you can actually find video game sound effects. And 100% the Resident Evil footsteps, gunshots, and zombie moans are on there.
And it's just like a 4-minute track of different footstep sounds or grunts or moans. Like maybe not 4 minutes, that might be a little much, but like two and a half minutes. And on my iPod, which is still somewhere, I have all of that on my iPod. It is under Capcom. And it's because honestly, and I'll tell you what, okay, this is like a tangent here, but my topic's short. Y'all, it'll be all right, y'all. When I say y'all, I mean the listeners. you get to hear this.
You know, I'm all about
the we're desensitized to it at this point.
Oh, right. I encourage it.
So, Brian, did you ever play Code Veronica? No.
I feel like I watched you play it.
Oh, maybe? Then you didn't. Wow. No, because I haven't played it since I had a Dreamcast back in the day. Okay. Yeah, no, unfortunately not. I wish. But so, BJ, do you remember? Do you remember?
The time. Anyway,
that's where I was going, but then I sang it like it was. Do you remember the 21st night of September? I was trying for Michael Jackson and it did not end up there.
You actually ended up in Earth, Wind, and Fire territory.
Exactly. From MJ to Earth, Wind, and Fire.
That happens.
There is the one scene where the guy, the cross-dressing villain, is like shot and killed, and his sister, who isn't dead, sings to him. And there was a friendly but naive king who wed a very nasty queen.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that
song. That song is why I went on eBay I don't think it was Amazon. I don't think Amazon was like prevalent when this came out, but I think I had to go on eBay and found the soundtrack because I wanted that song. I stopped myself, but I could literally sing that minute and a half song. I could sing it for you now. It is so etched into my brain. Ridiculous.
That game had such strong queer energy. Like when I tell you, because here's the thing, is he's cross-dressing as his sister. It's a very psycho moment where he's cross-dressing as his sister who is currently on ice. And here's the best part is, and like he's talking to himself, but then talking as her to himself. But then once you out him and you find out that he's just crazy, he runs around the rest of the game still in makeup, talking in her voice, but with his weird like military outfit. And it was, I remember playing that and I was like, that was definitely, I should have put that on my list of like pop culture gay awakening moments, but it was so entertaining and so creepy and so weird and so funny. And I was like, that's the only thing that makes me afraid if they remake it, that they won't. I need him to be at the end of Act One, still in his drag, but not the clothes and the wig, running around like trying to shoot you. I need that. I need that in my life more than anything. It is so weird. And it is like, if anybody ever asks me why gay people are into, there's horror gays that like love horror movies, I'm going to be like, that scene right there, or Nightmare on Elm Street, like Part Two, I think was super queer. So like those two things right there.
Oh, not when Kelly Rowland called Freddy a faggot. Not that part. No.
I feel like I used the word more after she used it.
Kelly Rowland gave us permission to say faggot again. That was the culture. She's an icon, she's a legend, and she is the moment.
If I ever meet her, I'm telling her that. I'm like, you gave me permission to use the F slur.
I mean, she probably would be happy that somebody said something that wasn't, can't believe you got mad that Nelly didn't text you back after you tried texting him in an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, but
Brian has no clue what we're referencing at all.
No idea, and I'm okay with that. But also, this is fantastic. You guys keep going.
We're going to educate you.
This is but this
Excel
is
spreadsheet stuff. Text message.
Oh my god! Wait. Okay, you got to explain that. So wait, she did okay. What now?
So in this music video, she's texting her boyfriend on a Sidekick, one of those like old Sidekick phones. Yep. However, when you look at the footage now, it's not an actual text bubble or message app. It is just an Excel spreadsheet.
Awesome. That's brilliant.
You're just like, and it was, I really need to go online and see if there's some sort of making of the video thing and see if they explain that, because it feels like the studio couldn't afford to just buy like a phone plan for like a day and just like have her text or borrow somebody's phone on set.
You know, some production assistant was like, oh, we need a phone. Quick, toss him that phone. Oh, no, what are you working on? Who cares? Just take it. Just go for it. Just do it. Like, we got to go.
We're losing daylight.
Where you at? Holla back at me or something like that. So it's not like it was just someone's random text message. Someone put this in, whether it was during the shoot or post-production. It was an Excel spreadsheet. But the thing is that she gets asked about it all the time, and it's 20 some odd years later. So for those of you who may be a little younger, or for Brian, the song is Dilemma, Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland. And on top of that, BJ, I literally just made Chris watch this the other night as I was going through music videos on YouTube. Nelly is standing outside of her window. Her window is open. He's literally right there. She can look out the window and talk to him. And then she gets so mad that she closes, clamshell style, closes her Sidekick and throws it in the trash. This is the most bizarre thing.
That music video is what it's like for me watching a Tyler Perry plot line. That's how I feel. When you see that music video, that's what it's like, and you have those questions in your head and you can't look away. That's what it's like when I watch a Tyler Perry movie. I'm just like, what are they doing? What is happening? Why are we, how did we get here?
How did this happen? It's phenomenal. It's fantastic. And it's one of the things that there are certain friends who we will literally, anytime we see the meme come up, we share it with each other, because it's just that important in our lives. So anyway, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Love this so much.
There was a winding road, but it was a connected road nonetheless.
Every day is a winding road.
That's the name of the podcast. Oh my god. This is the idea I had years ago of a show where all we do is start with a topic and see how far away from that topic we can get, or who can get it the furthest, right? And then still have to circle back. And that's the name of it. Every day is a winding, every podcast is a winding road. I love this.
And we blame on we try to license.
Yeah. Yes.
And we try to license Sheryl Crow's Every Day's a Winding Road and cost too much money. We're instantly bankrupted on the first episode. Sorry, folks. First and last episode.
But that's perfect. That's even better. Oh, it's art. I love it.
We just changed it to that point, dude. This podcast is a winding road. It's just not every, just this one. This one podcast. Anywho, any last thoughts on Final Fantasy before we move on?
No, it's great. It's a really fun game. There is a mini game called Blood Queen. Sure. It's like a card game, and it's actually very addictive and incredibly fun. And Square Enix is talking about actually making it a game. Either a physical card game or a digital one. So be on the lookout for that. I assure you it is very simple, but it is incredibly fun and interesting. So
I'll tell you what, Final Fantasy, one of the best things about that game are those random ass card side games that they make, and they are always fun. And well, they're almost always fun. And I fully endorse this. I love this. Best use of their side quests.
Yep. So, but yeah, if like I said, if you're on the fence about it, It's definitely worth getting. And if you don't have a PS5 and you're waiting to play it on PC, it should be porting over the PC probably by the time they release their DLC for it, because they'll probably release a DLC chapter for it.
There you go.
Yeah.
It was a large part of a portion of my friend group back in the day, and it's so funny to see it come back around and be a part of this group of people that I am around now. That is Final Fantasy VII, the remake. Both parts are out now on PS5. If you're playing it, let us know what you think, and then sing me the I wanna ride a Chocobo song online. Because literally, one of the only things I remember from Final Fantasy XV. That and they were a boy band for some reason.
Because of course.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go next. My topic is fairly short. So I didn't really have, there's been a lot going on in my life in the past couple of months. So I watch things, I absorb them, and then I completely forget what happened. Drag Race, though, has been a constant. We just did an episode about season 16 primarily. We did a little UK series 5 and a brief touch on UK versus the world 2. So if you want to hear us talk more about UK versus the world 2, let us know. Eric and I are watching. Maybe we'll coerce Brian into catching up and we can chat about that. Maybe, maybe not. Listen, just for the excellence of Marina Summers, we should talk about it. Especially if and when she wins the season, because she is phenomenal and deserves all of the accolades that she's getting. But because Eric isn't here, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm actually going to switch over. I'm going to be musically inclined this entire episode with both my topic here and my one up. But it's been a long time coming, or so are the words that lead into my topic. The Eras Tour, Taylor's version, which is now streaming, I would say for free, technically for free, if you have a subscription to Disney Plus. If you don't have a subscription to Disney Plus, that's a different story. You could do a free trial and then watch it. It's 3.5 hours of your life, and you know, for a free trial, it could be well worth it. But I get it as part of my Verizon package, so I don't have to pay for it. So technically, I'm still paying for it because I'm paying for my phone usage. But if you were lucky enough to be a person who saw the Eras Tour live, like I was very fortunate to have gotten a ticket that I didn't spend $14,000 on. Or I think maybe, well, no, there were some that people that spent like 20K on like floor seats, front row seats for the shows.
Oh my God.
I'd never do that. But I won the Great War with Ticketmaster and got tickets when they went on sale. I got regular price tickets. We were up in the nosebleeds, but we got to experience it here in Chicago on night one. But while Taylor was in LA doing 6 nights, they filmed the concert movie, which was released on October 13th in limited engagement in the theaters, became the top grossing tour film of all time, and also paved the way for another fantastic artist, Beyonce, to do something similar a few months later with the Renaissance tour film as well. Then, December 13th, for Taylor's birthday, they released the Eras Tour as a rentable film on multiple platforms. You could rent it on YouTube, you could rent it on Amazon Prime, pretty much any platform that allowed renting. You could rent the film for $19.89, which, as most Swifties know, is the year Taylor was born. So a lot of these things happen, and you know, there's no coincidence in the world of Swift. And the film that was released on for streaming to rent included 2 additional songs that were not included. They cut down the set list for the theatrical version, and then they added 2 songs in for the rental version. And then when they announced a partnership with Disney Plus where the Eras Tour Taylor's version would live they are giving you the full concert experience. They added in the final song that was performed during the set list, which was Cardigan. And as a surprise bonus, they gave you 4 additional acoustic songs. For those who may be unfamiliar with the acoustic set, Taylor Swift's Eras Tour at its start was approximately 3 hours and 15 minutes long, spanning 10 eras of her career, kind of. Her self-titled debut album, Taylor Swift, does not have a place on the set list, but she has performed most of the songs from that album in some way, shape, or form during what became known as the surprise song set or the acoustic set. So outside of her standard full band performance, there would be 2 songs a night, one on the guitar, one on the piano, that she would perform. And she had given herself a rule that unless she fucked up a song, she would not play a song more than once. That has gone out the window when she restarted the tour, and she started doing mashups of at least 2 songs from her catalog into some surprise, really cool hits. And it's been a lot of fun. But those surprise songs were special to each city. For my concert, we got The Lakes, which is a folklore track, which I love. That's one of my favorite albums. And then I'm going to get dragged by the Swifties who may listen to this. But we got a 1989 track, I Know Places, I believe was our second song. Or our first song, I should say. And then The Lakes, she played on piano, which was gorgeous. I loved it. But getting to re-experience the concert, and I think I talked about the concert after I went, it was quite honestly an amazing experience. 3 hours and 15 minutes of standing there, dancing around, surrounded by a shit ton of people that were just enjoying the moment. Friends who were moderate, mild Swifties. I made the playlist. I knew the songs. I knew what was going on before I went in there, except for the surprise songs. Like I was excited. I was so ready for it. I bawled my eyes out to The Archer. I got all my crying out in the first era. She did the Lover set first. I cried like a baby. And like, I got emotional when the concert started. Because I really got back into Taylor Swift in 2018, had tickets to see her in 2019 on the Reputation Tour. I had tickets in 2020 to see Loverfest. There were only 4 shows in the U.S. I had tickets to that. And then the Panorama happened, and that screwed up that whole thing. So getting to come back to this, having Folklore be such an album that I'm still so attached to, and getting to experience all that, it was amazing. So when this came out, I watched it. I don't want to say the minute, because I guess, seeing like Twitter posts, I was a few minutes behind. But I essentially watched it when it started, when it was available to stream at 8 p.m. Central on March 14th. And watched it all the way through, including, the credits, including what they called the acoustic set at the end, where they played all 6 songs, including the 2 that were in the film. The 4 extra were part of the 6 song set at the end after the credits. It was fantastic. I'm never going to say that Taylor Swift is the most iconic vocalist of all time, but she sings well. She's an amazing songwriter. She's a great performer. She can dance like no other white girl out there. She's never going to be cited as, a Ginger Rogers, counterpart in the aughts, in tens and twenties of 2000. But she puts on a great show, and it was so amazing getting to relive it and just have that feeling and see things that I didn't really get to see being so high up in the stadium, and seeing it 3 months into the tour versus 6 months into the tour. And this bitch is still out there touring the show. She did South America a few months ago. Then she went to Asia. She did Japan and like Singapore. She came back for the Super Bowl and then bounced over to Australia and did like 8 or 9 shows there. And now is taking another short break and then touring and picking up in Paris in, I think, right around the time that her next album comes out. So, like, and then she's touring it all the way into 2020. She started in 2023. She doesn't end this leg of the tour until late this year. She comes back to the States and Canada and does like 6 nights in Toronto, does a couple of shows in Indianapolis. I think it's going back to Florida, but she has like a whole nother set of dates in the States in October, November of 2024, a year and a half after starting this tour. She's been on tour so long, you guys, that she announced a whole other goddamn album that nobody knows how she's going to fit that in because she's in the middle of a tour. How do you fit songs from a new album into a show that's already 3 hours and 20 minutes long? Like, it's insane. This woman is unstoppable. And that's why the right thinks that she's a witch that's trying to indoctrinate young women into becoming feminists so that way they can peg their men. And I say, go off, sis. Go.
Yeah, do it.
Like, yeah. Honestly.
But, she's the peg witch.
But it's crazy. Like, honestly, you know, we got the Tortured Poets Department coming out and she is fucking with her fans because we've all been waiting for Reputation, Taylor's version, to be announced. She has 2 more re-records left. She only has 2 left. Reputation, which is my other favorite album, and then her debut album. So, as everybody likes to say, all that she has left to take back is her name and her reputation. And then she'll have own everything. She will own all of her stuff. But everybody had all these theories. If you want to see some of the most unhinged girl math, stretching, all of this, go on TikTok and look up like Taylor Swift and watch the conspiracy videos. Watch the videos of like, guys, something is coming on March 15th. Taylor has been saying 3 and 15. All of these different places, this plus this equals 15. It is unhinged. And I live for it. I live for it. Because at this point, I can't believe shit no more. Because they're so convincing. I literally thought that they had moved up the start of the Taylor's version of the Eras Tour. Because she was going to announce something at midnight. Because the concert film, if you watch it at 9 p.m. Eastern, would have ended right around midnight. Which would have been time for an announcement. But it was not. It did not happen. I'm tired of looking like a clown believing this shit.
This is why I can't be famous or have like copious amounts of talent for anything, because I would at some point I would just start trolling people and be like 5 seconds left. And then like 1 a.m. rolls around and be like, I ate a burrito. Like, good night, everybody.
But literally, yeah, literally, it's I think she is now just playing with the fandom because like things will happen. And it's like, oh, it's National Red Nose Day. And like, is she saying that we're all just clowns? Like, it's crazy. Like National Snake Day, because Reputation's motif was snakes. Like all of these things are out there and it's great. But yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, if you are even if you are just mildly entertained by Taylor Swift and you have 3.5 hours to just like enjoy music, watch the Eras Tour film. It is utterly just an amazing showcase of 17 years of this woman's career in a concert form. And there actually is at least one song from every single album that she has put out up to this date. Because one of the surprise songs is from her first album. So there is representation from every single album on this film. So I'll step off my Swifty soapbox and just encourage you all to watch the Eras Tour, Taylor's version on Disney Plus, and then buy or stream the Tortured Poets Department when it comes out on April 19th, because more Taylor music is always fun. So Yeah. Dear listeners, we thank you so much for listening to our podcast and supporting us all this time. Check out our website, flameonshow.com. And if you would be so kind, head over, give us a rating and a review, preferably 5 stars. We like it when it's 5 stars on your favorite podcasting app. And we appreciate you and we thank you. All right, let's do this. Brian, what you got for us?
So I saw the movie that is dominating the box offices in the U.S. and I guess worldwide, or will be very soon if it hasn't already like dominated. I know it's not out in Japan as of at least recently. So I don't know. It's rolling out. And that movie is Dune 2. Yes. Electric Boogaloo, of course. No.
Dune. Part deux.
Part deux. Yes. Aww. Part deux. Good. I like that. I do the Electric Boogaloo way too much. Let's make that a thing. Okay. Again, what was it? Hot Shots, right? Great again. Yes. No. So
make Charlie Sheen great again.
Oh, geez. I did some heavy lifting. So yeah, Dune 2. This is of course a remake, sort of. It's not a remake. I said that earlier, but really it's a new adaptation of Frank Herbert's seminal work of science fiction that if you went to college and or smoked a lot of weed and or just were one of those nerdy little, you know, kids in school that like sci-fi, I mean, you've read Dune. Or a lot of people read Dune. And
which one were you?
Well, you know, I wasn't the one that smoked the dopey, unfortunately. I regret that choice now as I get older in my life. No, I was definitely the nerdy little, you know, high school kid. But it was one of the first sci-fi books. I think it was like the third, maybe fourth sci-fi novel I ever read. And honestly, just one of the most influential for me and just my what I like, what I believe in terms of like, not believe, but like what I am interested in philosophy and science and religion and the interplay of all of that. And even though I have a soft spot in my heart for both the Lynch film from 84, the Lynch adaptation, and the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that they adapted, actually the first three novels of the Dune series, both exist and are great in their own ways. I even have a soft spot in my heart for the failed adaptation that Jodorowsky, Spanish director, tried to make in the 70s and failed spectacularly. And it's a great documentary if you want to look up Jodor, J-O-D-O-R-O-S-K-Y, probably how you think. Jodorowsky's Dune. If you can find it, if it's a streaming thing, probably you should watch it. Great soundtrack, but you just blows your mind what they were trying to do with this film, especially after you've read the book or you've seen these movies. But all of that aside, this adaptation that was started, two years ago with Denis Villeneuve, one of my also favorite directors who did Blade Runner 2049, one of my favorite sci-fi movies of the last decade. You know, great first half of the book, but kind of like left you going, oh, well, that's not all the story. And even if you didn't know the story, you're kind of like left going, wait, that's how you're ending it. So, you know, getting to part two was so exciting for me, and seeing how he would land the ship, so to speak, knowing already what is to come, how he would change things for his own purposes, for storytelling reasons, and for modernization of the story. Because as much as Frank Herbert was a very like liberal, progressive, you know, in a lot of ways, he also was a sci-fi writer who was a man in the 70s. I mean, he wrote a lot of dudes. Like, there's this beat, and Villeneuve's talking about this in one of the interviews he did, that, like, you know, the Fremen have an egalitarian society, men and women are equal, and da, 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 all this good stuff. And they say this in the film, they reiterate it. In the book, you don't get the female perspective very strongly. You get female characters, and they have their place, but you don't get their perspective as strongly as you could. And specifically Chani, who is the love interest of Paul Muad'Dib Usul Atreides, among his other names. So you don't get her. She doesn't have a lot of agency. She kind of gets sucked into the machinations of her husband. Well, eventually her husband, but her love. So in this new retelling or this new adaptation of the second part of the first book, Shani is a much more strongly written character with her own agency, her own plot, her own ideas, and it changes the story. And I throw that out there. It's a little spoilery, but only if you know how the books go or you've seen the Lynch film, I guess, or sci-fi. But like, it is way for the better. And even though a lot of people were shocked and a lot of people were talking about it, I think, again, it really makes a case for the ultimate story of this book, which is not what people probably thought it would be when they first like watched the part one. And we'll talk maybe, I don't know, we'll talk about that. But like, it is such a great, feminist isn't the right word for it, but it's feminist, of course. But it just makes the story better. It just makes everything better. It makes the adaptation stronger. So I'm thrilled that they made that change. Other changes, other things, casting wise, I could probably go either way. But before I get to that, just musically, visually, sound design wise, acting, I think across the board, it's a great film. It's a little more action-y than the first part. So, you know, if you like a big spectacle blockbuster summer film, almost summer, it can kind of work that way, especially towards the end. But I think a lot of people are comparing it to like Game of Thrones. And that is so interesting because Game of Thrones, what's his name? George R. R. Martin was such a Dune fan that I think the Dune DNA stepped into what he did for Game of Thrones. And now that people are reacting to Dune because of Game of Thrones and House of Dragons and all this other stuff, it's cool. It's cool to see like, oh, we can tell a rich, multi-character, big political Machiavellian drama thing, fantasy, and people are into that. They're like along for the ride. And I think 10 years ago, this couldn't have been made. I mean, not technologically, maybe, but like, I just don't think people would have reacted as well, you know? But it's killing. I mean, it's killing so many people who I never thought would be a Dune fan or like, long live the fighters and talking about Muad'Dib and the Mahdi and shit. And I'm just like, this is great. This is so good. Before I go on and prattle even more, have either of you seen part one or part two?
I haven't yet. I've been actually toying with the idea of marathoning it. Because I wasn't sure. You never know. I mean, granted, usually franchises are a sure thing, but I wasn't sure if it was going to get a part two, and it was going to make me really mad if I watched the first one and then they set it up for the next one and then didn't do it. I'm toying with the idea of like the next time it's like a rainy day or something and I don't really want to go anywhere, I'm just going to like get a bunch of snacks and then head to my room and like watch it.
Pat,
you know that I haven't.
I think you watched
nope.
the Lynch film, but not the nope. new ones. No?
Nope.
I thought you did for some reason. I didn't make nope. you watch that.
Now, Brian, here's the $100 question. Did you get the Dune popcorn bucket?
No. I would have. Honestly, I did see the SNL skit about it. Great, fantastic. Perfect. For those of you who don't know, just Google is your friend. I wish I could have gotten it. I did have a weird experience seeing it. I saw it in this place that Seattle's famous from Seattle is called the Cinerama, actually no longer called that, but it's a giant two-story crazy large theater, but it's not like IMAX or anything. And I picked the seats that were way too close. Like I just looked at the wrong row on the chart. And so I sat like with my neck. The chairs do lean back. So I was able to kind of like wait, like lean back on it. But like it was still really hard to like track everything. But I kind of want to go back and see it in IMAX because the way they filmed it, and it does look like it'll be really cool in IMAX. So no, but they did not have the buckets. But yes, I would like one. So like,
well, the perverts got them before you got there.
Oh, they did. Totally. Oh, they were cleared out. The mostly teenagers or whatever. Teenage boys. So no, I just, this movie is really, it's really a lot. So, you know, I don't think people who aren't in for like a sensory overload. It's funny because I actually just watched Oppenheimer and I got that here on, you know, Blu-ray or whatever. And Oppenheimer is also very loud, but in a way you don't like you don't realize it's loud. It's just so present with constant music. What's nice about Dune is Villeneuve uses sound effectively, and even though the Hans Zimmer soundtrack is a lot, I mean it's pretty high rock opera crazy guitar. I mean it's no Toto like the ones that did the Lynch film, but it's along the lines of that. It's great in a lot of ways. And of course, if you go on TikTok, you'll see people reenacting Dune by my favorite is there are these girls in like a tunnel, and then they do that like war chant thing that like I'm not going to try to do it, but if you've watched any trailer, you heard it. And then the other one I like is, I guess, like a New York subway, and this guy is waiting for the subway, and he like takes his umbrella and he like pounds it into the ground, and then it pops up, and he like puts it out ready to like grab onto the subway. It's anyway, stupid stuff, but I mean that Dune is seeping into TikTok culture in that way makes me so happy. At least until TikTok is made illegal, and then
for now,
yeah, for now. So no, Dune is great. Again, oh, quibbles. I do have just a teeny couple. The one thing casting wise, I would not have done. What's his name? Not Dennis Hopper. I always do that. Christopher Walken is in it, and I don't know why. He plays a role that's not huge in the books. I mean, it's a big position, but the character doesn't have a whole lot of stuff to do. Like he sets up a few things and you get a little whatever. So he has to be there for certain roles, but he's Christopher Walken. Like, I just would love to understand like the why. And someone said it's because he was a Fat Boy Slim reference to Dune. That he's in that music video where he's dancing. And he didn't realize that was
a weapon of choice.
Yeah.
He was a weapon of choice. I remember that. And I remember seeing that video being like, why is Christopher Walken here?
And it's the same with this. It's like, I mean, I love Christopher Walken. I'm not saying, and he doesn't do a bad job either, but because it's Christopher Walken and he doesn't do anything that different or interesting. And if anything, the way he plays, it's the emperor of the whole known universe. Like the way he plays him is so understated and humble. Like it's a choice. Flip that. It's a minimalist choice. Flip that to Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, Na Baron, Fade Rotha, Beast Raban, all that, all the Harkonnens, like they're the big bads, you know, they're very bad guy. It just, that's all you need, bad guys, right? They do this cool thing where they film their home world in IR and strip away the color. And what you're left with when you do that is this intense black and white that just looks completely otherworldly. And the reason they do that, I forgot this until I was listening to the interview, it's because that planet in the books has a black sun. And so the idea is to reproduce the light you get from a black sun. You shoot you get the stuff shot in IR. It's phenomenally bizarre. And in a way that, again, for a major Hollywood blockbuster, it's a little art house. Like, I'm not saying this is an art house film, but Villeneuve is not a Michael Bay. He is not even a, what's his name? Oh gosh. I mean, he's more like Christopher Nolan in that way, right? He's got a little more of the auteur perspective, but like makes big budget, very complicated, usually, but not always loud movies. Anyway, I applaud the risk. And I've been prattling on about those, you know, folks. Zendaya, I have not seen, what's her show? Oh God. Not kid show.
Euphoria.
Yes. Thank you. I want to say Eureka, and I'm like, I know it's not Eureka. Euphoria, I've only seen parts of her. Like, I've only seen some episodes. Like, but she's an amazing. I actually got into this argument.
Oh my God.
They were saying that they didn't think she was a good actress. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, breathed life into this character who in the Lynch film was played by Sean Young, and very, like, forgettably. Hope that doesn't offend anyone who loves Sean Young. Is it Sean Young? Yeah, it is Sean Young. Anyway, but like, yeah, she Zendaya kills this character. It's so good. So good. And then there's two other divisive things, and I'll be quick. There's Stilgar, who is played by, oh my God, Javier Bardem. And I think he's great. I love him. I think he's a little comic relief in certain moments. And I think people who are like, oh no, the book's serious. They shouldn't have comic relief. I'm like, oh, come on. It's a Hollywood movie. You got to have a little spice in there. You can't just be all serious. Can't be, it'd be boring. So Javier Bardem as Stilgar, this bear of a man, which he's turned into a delightfully looking, like bearish individual, Spanish bear. Yeah. He's great though. He's like this rough guy who you start to see is a little religious fanatic. And admittedly, in this day and age, that's not always a good, that's usually a bad thing. But what's funny is, like, he brings humor to it. He brings this, like, kind of fanaticism, but sort of humor. And the audience is laughing. I mean, they were outright laughing. I think sometimes at moments that weren't really meant for comedy. But anyway, so, again, great performances from that. Chalamet, sure. All the other folks, they're fine, sure. Josh Brolin's back in it. Great. Love him. He's no Patrick Stewart, who played it, you know, same character in Lynch film. But either way, it's fine. Francis Pugh, yeah, Irulan, great, fine, you know, all that's good. The only other quibble people seem to have about this is there is another change to the book that sort of implies that these, they call the Bene Gesserit, they're space witches, whatever, space nuns, that they have like mental powers and like they can like talk to each other telepathically, and they're like, that's not in the book. It's like, it's fine, I know, it's okay. We do this all the time for shortcut reasons or storytelling reasons. If there's a beat you need and they already know, you already know they're superhuman, that they have special powers anyway, like just deal with it. Like just accept it. But those were the only two really big problems that I've talked to people who like that they had. So, I mean, you know, whether you're a new fan of the book, like you've never seen it, you never read it, you have no idea, or you're a deep dyed in the wool, like Dune fanatic, you're going to enjoy a lot of this movie. It's just quite a ride. BJ, I don't know if part one and part two back to back is going to mess you up, but I feel like in some ways you're going to get an experience out of it. I would say go on eBay, see if you can get a popcorn bucket, you know, leftover secondhand. They probably are only fans that sell those, you know, from,
I was going to say, I don't want to get it secondhand unless it's been cleaned out and disinfected.
I mean, there's a market for that. Right. But,
I mean,
yeah, it's good stuff. I highly recommend Dune 2, and yeah, see it in IMAX if you can. See it in the theater if you can. Honestly, it is one of those movies that it will lose a little something on the small screen. Just if anything, just don't watch it on your phone or on in an airplane, like on the phone or on the thing, because that's probably the most horrible waste of your time. I mean, some of the shots are so large, like the backdrops are so large, like you see the person is like an ant. And that's by design. Like that's the scale he wanted to convey. So seeing it on like a, you know, little teeny screen is going to be, yeah, my eyes are bad. And I feel like I'd just be like, forget it. It's not worth it. But yeah, no, Dune 2 is out. I'm sure it'll be out for a while in the theaters. You should go check it out. 5 out of 5 flames.
5 out of 5 sandworms. I could make references on things that I haven't seen before. It happens. There you go. So Dune parts 1 and 2 both out, so yes, go check them out and then geek out with Brian, because thank God someone can finally.
Oh, about Dune, at least.
I mean, it's true. All right, so those are our topics for the month. And now it's time to do our other favorite part of the episode, where we're going to do another round of our one-ups. These are smaller topics, if you are new to the podcast, where we share things that are giving us life, 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 life. As I play the Mariah Carey Giving Me Life clip. I haven't done that so long. I'm sad about that. These are the things that are giving us life. There are one-ups. We'll go back around the other way. Brian, I know you just had a whole dissertation about Dune 2, but why don't you share with us what your one-up is?
I know, mine had so few little tangents. I wish we had... I'll try better next time. I do like to encourage that. So I have a couple, I picked one big one, but I'll do a couple here real quick. So the big one is Shogun. I did not watch the series. This is also another remake, funny enough, of a series from, I believe, the 80s, might have been 70s, but I think it was early to mid 80s, of the Japanese era. It's not Edo. What era is it? might be Showa. Anyway, it's one of the eras. I should know my history, and I don't, or my history. I should know Japanese history. I've been trying to study it, but yeah. But like the era in like the 16, 1700s, where there weren't a lot of outside people in Japan, but the Portuguese were there, mostly missionaries and traders, and the British pirate, basically, sort of a religiously aligned pirate. He kind of like stumbles in, but he makes his way into Japan and has wacky adventures with fictionalized characters from that era in Japan. So this is on FX, Hulu probably is where many people are watching it. Great show. The original series, a little hokey at times, also because of the era it was made, but they didn't shoot anything like in Japan. They didn't shoot any period appropriate sort of stuff. They didn't even have any Japanese, I believe. This movie, not shot in Japan, but in British Columbia, surprisingly, or Alberta or somewhere in north of here. But very much like 90%, 75% Japanese, all Japanese actors minus the non-Japanese people. And again, subtitle, just Japanese. So great for me. I love it. Love Japanese culture. So I recommend that. I think it's on episode 5. It's released weekly, so I don't know. Probably be episode 5 or 6 when this comes out. But I think it's a limited run. I don't expect they're going to keep doing more of it. It's kind of a set story. And I was just at the fictional. I was at the real location of the fictional sort of historical castle in Osaka that they use in some of the shows. So that was kind of neat. The other one I want to throw out there, and this just closed, so you probably can still get it if you go to Northwest Press eventually. But our dear friends at Northwest Press, Zan Christensen, is kickstarting a book. It's called Horny and High. And it is, I've already seen some of it. It is delightfully, it's queer. And it's from French cartoonist, I should say, Ed Firth. The style is on the sketchier side, and I don't mean sketchy like bad. I mean just a little less like, you know, they're not going for realism. And yeah, no, it's fantastic. It's got separate stories, so it's not like this epic work. You can just dip in and out and enjoy those short stories. They're sexy. They're, you know, very honest in a lot of ways about queer, gay, specifically gay relationships and hookups and things. So highly recommend. Again, I think it looks like, yeah, I just checked, you can buy this through Northwest Press. So if you go to northwestpress.com, you can go buy it now that the Kickstarter is successful. And yeah, check it out. I think you will enjoy it if you are into queer, smutty comics.
Wait, but what country is Ed from?
I thought he was French. What? What did I say?
Wait, you sure it's not? No.
What? No. What? What'd I do?
No. You not know the Miss Universe contestant when they were doing their countries? It's like Sweden, Thailand, France.
Oh my God! Yes, I forgot about her.
Oh, she lives in our lives every week. Every week here in Chicago when we go to Big A Game Show, because right before we do Are You Smarter Than Sofonda, it literally has grown. It's this whole little like video thing, and then it would be Candace Kane from like season 5 of Drag Race going, "Hit it!" And then now it's evolved into, "Hey, hit it! Hit it!" And then Aubrey Plaza. Right?
Yeah. Ah! I love her version way more. Yeah, no, that's great.
I had never watched that skit before until like last week, and then watched the whole like 5 minute skit. It is fantastic.
I will say, anyway, if you haven't seen, I will tangent now just briefly. The last SNL that was out, again, this should actually still be the last SNL when this comes out. They do a parody sketch of the State of the Union response, or actually no, maybe in a week ago, State of the Union response, that crazy Alabama politician, yeah. ScarJo does a fantastic, so perfect, like pitch perfect representation of that. I hadn't watched that, the real one. I watched her first, cause you know, I didn't know. And then I immediately watched the real one, and holy Jesus. Like, it's not only an intense and scary and horrifying thing to hear come out of some woman's mouth and from her kitchen, because that optics made sense to them. Anyway, like, it's just, it goes from like scary to heartwarming and tragic to sexy. It's weird. So weird. It's so, yeah, gotta watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
These people.
BJ. BJ, got as your one up.
So we had a bunch of trailers kind of drop for the stuff that's going to be popping up during from now to the summer. Ghostbusters, Frozen
Empire.
Was that Frozen Kingdom?
Empire.
Frozen Empire. That comes out this week. And then we've got a trailer for the new Crow movie, speaking of remakes. We've got a trailer for something that I know is probably going to be terrible, but I'm going to watch it and I'm going to love every second of it. A movie called Sting, which is a spider horror movie about a giant spider loose in an apartment building. and then today, the trailer for Star Wars Acolyte. So we'll be getting, I believe it takes place during the High Republic, either the High Republic or the Old Republic. I believe
it's the High Republic.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to see that. And I'm actually kind of, I was iffy on the Crow trailer or on the Crow, the new Crow movie with Skarsgård playing the main character, but it actually looks pretty good. It looks like it was ripped from the 90s, which I think I appreciate more than anything. It definitely looks like it was filmed in the 90s and just brought forward in time. And then they have been dropping clips of this like crazy. I don't know if Pat's watched any of them, but X-Men 97 will be dropping the day after this recording. And I watched one clip, I watched one clip and I almost started crying. I don't know what it was, but it looked so good. And the trailers have me super excited. So that drops the 20th of this month. So as this recording's released, it would have already been out for a couple of days. But yeah, those are the things that are currently giving me life.
I am so fucking excited for X-Men 97 and the introduction of Madeline Pryor and the birth of our Lord and Savior Cable. Just saying. So excited. There's so many people online that are like, we should watch it like it was intended on Saturday morning as part of our Saturday morning cartoons. And I want to. But I don't think I can wait to do it. So I was talking to Chris earlier and was like, yeah, I don't know. He's like, well, maybe you just rewatch it on Saturday morning. I was like, yeah, you'll come out of your room. You'll just see me in the living room with my bowl of Lucky Charm, just rewatching it on Saturday morning. Oh, it's going to be so exciting. All right. So I initially only had one thing, but since other people brought up multiple things, I thought of another one that is worth putting out into the universe. So my my side tangent one, Jinx Monsoon back on Broadway in New York. Not only is she going to be starring in Little Shop of Horrors off Broadway, but she's also returning to Chicago in, I believe, June and July or June through August this summer. So if you are in the New York area and you did not get to see Jinx the first time that she was in Chicago, you can see her this summer, and then there's also the off-Broadway production of Little Shop. So go check her out. I'm gonna possibly plan on going out to New York in July so I can go see her in Chicago, because I'm sad that I missed it the first time. So that's just a side tangent. I thought about that as y'all were talking and felt like bringing that up. But Unhinged, I talked about it when I was talking about the Swifties and that fandom and all of the Easter eggs that Taylor puts out. Another artist that I have become a huge, huge, huge fan of since late 2021, and I've brought her up here, And even when I was in San Fran with friend of the pod, Jamie, Fletcher was on his playlist or his like Spotify. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. When you talked about her album, I went and I downloaded it because he was going through some similar things to what I was talking about and some of the themes of the songs. But Fletcher is amazing and just an unhinged lesbian. And I fucking live for it. She has a new album coming out the day this episode drops, March 22nd. It's called In Search of the Antidote. She's released three singles from the album already. Started with Eras of Us, and then we got Lead Me On. And then, oh my God, why am I blanking on the third song? Doing Better is the third single that was released. Let me just tell you this. This ties back to the Taylor Swift piece. If Eras of Us sounds familiar to me talking about the Eras tour, she wrote this song because she ran into her ex-girlfriend of four years for the first time in person at the Taylor Swift concert she went to. And went on to write a song about it. And it is unhinged. And not like, you know, it's a great song, but to kind of have that be the catalyst, and then listening to the rest of the singles so far, Girl of My Dreams, her first full length album, which came out in 22, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's been 2 years. It ends. It's a journey. It's a bit unhinged. It's a bit dealing with a lot of emotions after a breakup. And then she, you know, the pandemic hit and she got like introspective and maybe got some therapy, and it was a healing journey on that album. I don't think that healing took, because it just feels so fucking unhinged, and it is going to be some of the craziest music, and I'm so excited for it. Friday, I work from home. I will more than likely just have the audio playing on my television in my office, my bedroom / office, while I work, and I'm so excited for it. Tickets, just, it's her birthday today as we're recording this on March 19th. So happy birthday, Fletcher, because I know you'll listen to this. But pre-sale for her tour went on sale today, and I got tickets. I'm gonna go see Fletcher at Aragon later this year, and I am super stoked about it. So Fletcher, In Search of the Antidote, comes out March 22nd. We got X-Men 97 this coming out. I this is a really good week for me and pop culture. So I don't know. If you're a Fletcher fan, or if you listen to it because I mentioned it on here and you like her music, let me know. I need more Fletcher fans that aren't women. Because I'm tired of going to Fletcher concerts and being one of its lesbians, straight girls, the boyfriends that they drag to the concert, and then a small handful of faggots, and I am one of them. And yeah, I need more guys around to go party and hang out and watch Fletcher, listen to Fletcher music. So let me know, hit me up, y'all. But with that being said, dear listeners, thank you so much for just being here through all of these episodes. If you're a new listener, welcome. If you've been with us for a while, we're glad to have you around, and we do this because of you. So check us out online, flameonshow.com. You can also go onto your favorite podcasting app, give us a 5-star rating, and give a little review about why you enjoy our show and why others would enjoy it as well. It is extremely helpful for the algorithms, and we appreciate you for it. So with that being said, until next time, dear listeners, bye, bitches.
Bye.